Hello, and welcome to Field Notes.
Hey, Meryl.
Hey, Robert.
So we're back. It's 2020.
2020.
This is our first episode of Field Notes for the new year. And I don't know about you, but I'm excited.
Me too. It's not just a new year. It's a whole new decade. It's a big time.
It is a whole new decade. And I was like, what was the previous decade called? Was it the 20-teens?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Until we hit the 20s.
Well, now we're now it's the roaring 20s. Here we go.
Well, I heard that you've been on the road a little bit and you've been having conversations with some of our friends from across the state. Tell me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So as we are closing out the last decade and getting the next one started, I really wanted to go talk to some of my favorite folks from across the state and say, when they look back on the last year, what are the things that stand out to them? And not just the last year, but the last decade. What are some of the good stories that have come out from across the state in communities? And really sort of as we move forward, let's take some of the momentum of the good work that we've been doing to carry us forward.
Right.
And so I got a bunch of people on the phone and said, hey, tell me what you wish that more people knew about in your community.
Right, because it hasn't been as much as the narrative sometimes is negative about education, especially in the South. And oftentimes folks in Georgia don't know about the good stuff happening even in their own backyard. So this sounds like it's going to be a really awesome way to wrap up the 20-teens and step forward into 2020.
I can't wait for you to hear some of these stories. It's a good, inspirational group of people, starting with one of my favorite superintendents, Dr. Bubba Longrear from Candler County, which is kind of in between Macon and Savannah. Mm-hmm. He was the first guy I called. I said, all right, tell me what you wish we knew. And so here we have Bubba telling us about Candler County.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do it.
I am excited to have you on the phone with us today. So we are, as we are sort of bringing this decade to a close, we're collecting good stories of the past decade to sort of say what's been going on in education, sort of the stories of education past. And so I was hoping you would share with us a gem for us to look back on as we get ready to move forward into 2020.
Well, Meryl, I'll be happy to. You know, when we first talked about this project, my mind went to any type of a specific thing, but really to me, one of the biggest things in education in Georgia and public education over the last 10 years is really a shift towards more flexibility and student focus from where we were before. What I would like to do is talk through a couple of specific areas and give examples of how the shift has really impacted student learning and student success and graduation rate.
Absolutely.
Better. So I'll jump right in. You know, when we talk about flexibility, I have to think back to a time when there was no flexibility with what we call seat time. And a student that might have been in the high school that was taking a U.S. history, for example, and they failed the class with a 69 or 68 or 67, they're so close, and it might have came down to one day missed or, you know, a couple of questions missed on an exam. That student had to go back through a remediation class, usually in the summer because it wasn't offered any other time, and it might have required 60 hours of seat time to make that up. And I have an example. I was a high school principal and we had a couple of students that had failed a class and, you know, the requirement was, okay, you failed, you have to go to summer school. We didn't offer summer school where we were, but there was one about 25 miles away a high school was doing and you had to pay this money to do it. Well, these particular students were athletes and they were trying to get their eligibility to be able to play the sport the following fall. Well, I remember that summer, there was strict requirements on them being there and on time if you're tardy, so forth. Well, the boys had a flat tire on the way to school over there. It was hard enough to get transportation, but the car that they did secure to be able to transport them. Had a flat tire. They're calling me, panic. Well, we wind up running somebody over there, picking them up, getting them to school, working with the director of that summer school so they would not have done all of that for naught and have missed too much time. And,
oh, my goodness.
And leading to there, there's been such a shift. And now, you know, it's a very common theme at a high school that not only are they allowing students to go back and focus on the areas where they truly were deficient based upon standards and how they measure the standards, but even mid-semester, they can do a pulse check, go in, okay, a student's struggling here. Let's start remediating before the end of the semester. Just think it's so much more student-focused. It's so much more of a common-sense approach, and it's better for education, and it's better for the workforce in the future because, in reality, that's the way things are done in real life. So that's one, you know, example of seat time at the high school specifically. And then if I could, you know, transition to, you know, we're moving away from the only avenue to get a high school diploma is 4 years within a brick and mortar building where mm-hmm. you school so many days a year, you're there, it's from 8 to 3:30, and if you know don't fit in or whatever else, you have to go find another route, and historically there hadn't been other options. So many students at the high school level that are struggling really point to the fact of, quote, the drama of high school. They're not interested in the extracurricular activities, they're not interested in all the social time, they want to get there. Coursework, secure the credits that they need, and move on. There's so many more options with that now. Mountain Ed Charter High School up in Northeast Georgia was really a pioneer in that sense. They started an alternative type school, and not alternative in a negative sense, but a flexible, different style for those students who were dropping out of school. That model was then adopted by Foothills, in the central east central, I guess, part of the state, Madison County, Athens, Clark County, that area. And then about 4 years ago, down in Southeast Georgia, where we're located, we adopted that same model. We shadowed Foothills for a year, and then we went out on our own, and we have a system called Coastal Plains Education Charter High School. And what they do is they meet in different locales Monday through Thursday, from 4 o'clock to 8 or 8:30. There's a real heavy emphasis on mentors. A lot of the students have a personal mentor that checks them. They develop individual graduation plans. They're constantly interacting with them. It's unique in that the student doesn't have to show up if they're having a bad day, they're having to work that night, or if the baby's sick, if they have a baby or whatever else, it's flexible. But they have an end goal, and they have a mentor that works with them along that path. Currently, Coastal Plains Education Charter High School, which is has sites all over Southeast Georgia, Ricky Rents is our superintendent. There's right at 1,300 students that are taking advantage of that, and we've already had a large number of graduates. It's just really refreshing to see that there's different paths for students to take that might have experienced some life difficulties along the way. And there's a lot of them that are reaching the goals that we all have set for them that would not have made it otherwise.
Well, that is wonderful to hear about. It's good to see communities pulling together and finding ways and having the flexibility, like you said, to serve every student, sort of meet them where they are.
Absolutely.
And build a system that can make sure everybody gets what they need to get, you know, to and through high school and beyond.
Absolutely. Here in Candler County, 10 years ago, our graduation rate was, or maybe 12 years ago, was 59% at
Medical. My goodness.
And now we are consistently above 90, and we're 93% last
That's
year.
Fabulous. That's, I mean, what is that? Solid 10 points above the state average?
It is. It is in a community that, you know, 100% of the students are eligible for breakfast and lunch at no cost. We're fully CEP because we, you know, there's an 80% poverty rate, but this community values public education. These students understand the goal from that loving, caring staff that you referenced earlier. It's just exciting to see, but Coastal Plains was created to try to reach those other 7 to 8 to 9%, or even those that before had not accomplished. So Coastal Plains, we've had some graduates that were in their 20s that had come back and accomplished a goal that they were unable to meet when it was, you know, in the typical time frame, but now they're able to go back and accomplish that, and that's rewarding.
Well, that is magnificent, and it is certainly heartwarming and appropriate for this cold time of year. And I appreciate you sharing the story with us.
Absolutely. And I just really want to, Meryl, commend people at the state level for allowing that flexibility to take place. There's more of a embracing of let's think outside of the box and find the best way to serve students. And it's trickled down to the district and school level. And I think we're in a good place. And that flexibility has caused more of an interest and a focus from school level folks of, all right, let's get these students graduated and then let's help them beyond graduation, be it a career, be it secondary training, or be it the university if that's what they so choose. But providing all of the options for students and looking at what are you going to be doing when you're 25, 30, 35 years old to continue contributing to society.
That is excellent. Well, thank you, Bubba. I appreciate you taking the time, and I appreciate all the hard work you're doing with your community and your students. You know I love y'all, and it is always good to hear from you.
Well, we appreciate you all, Meryl, and the organization, and just how supportive you all are across the state, and just an honor to talk with you today.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Meryl.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
So that was great, Meryl. Where are we headed next?
Now we are going to take a swing through North Georgia up to the Gainesville area and the University of North Georgia to talk to Jennifer Herring.
All right.
Buckle up. Here we go.
Can you please introduce yourself to our podcast listening audience?
Good afternoon. My name is Jennifer Herring. I am the special assistant to the vice president of the Gainesville campus of the University of North Georgia. And I provide support, coordination, and planning across 4 of our 5 campuses for high priority initiatives for the university. In addition, I provide input on budgets, strategic planning, shared government, and other daily operations, as well as community engagement.
Jennifer, we are so excited to have you with us today. We talked earlier about we're sort of collecting gems that we can, you know, offer out to the education policy world, sort of say, here are the great things that have come before.
Well, as I think back over my last year here with the University of North Georgia, but also the last 10 years in education in the state, I think one of the things that continues to have more and more focus is the number of first-generation college students that we have in the state of Georgia. The university
that number is growing.
It is, and it's that is a wonderful, of all of the numbers and the ratios that we want to grow, that is definitely one that we want to grow. Here at the University of North Georgia, right at about 21.5% of our almost 20,000 students are self-identified as first-generation college students. And on our Gainesville campus, where my office is located, that number is actually a little bit higher at 28%.
My goodness.
And so one of the things as we look at those numbers, because I am a little bit of a data guru, and as we look at those numbers, we begin to think about the number of first-generation students that are having access to post-secondary options. And then what do we do to ensure that once we get them on our campus, that they have the supports that they need to persist to degree completion?
So having, you guys have had that growing number and that, you know, growing focus, what have you guys come up with?
Well, I drew a lot off of my own personal experiences in college, being a first-generation college student and feeling very lost and not knowing where to turn to or who to go to when I had questions or challenges. And so as we thought about that, and I drew from my personal experiences, we begin to look at not just the number of first-generation college students we have on our campuses, but we begin to look at the number of faculty and staff that we have that were also first-generation college students. And then in talking with many of them, we were able to identify that our faculty and our staff experienced a lot of the same obstacles and challenges that our current students are still facing today in some shape, form, or fashion. And so we begin to think, how can we, as an institution, begin to connect those faculty and staff to our current students and create an additional resource for our current students? So we came up with the Proud to Be First, First Generation College Celebration Lunch, which we recently held the first one on our Gainesville campus during First Generation Week on November the 8th. And what we did is we invited our first generation students as well as faculty and staff to a very nice lunch. And at the lunch, we had one of our faculty members speak about the challenges that she had. And she talked about how when she was in school and it was time for her to start visiting colleges, that she actually had her high school counselor tell her that she would not sign off on her form to go visit colleges because she thought that would be a waste of money for everybody, because her counselor did not think that she was college material. Needless to say, this particular first-generation college student is a very engaged, very successful professor in our College of Education today. We also had with this lunch, we had one of our very own first-generation Reach Georgia scholars, who is now currently a junior here at the university, speak to her experiences in college and the things that she's had to overcome, and talk about some of the resources that have helped her overcome these obstacles and these challenges as she has navigated college. And it was a very emotional day for us to hear these stories. One of the things that we also did, again, is we awarded a scholarship to one of the attendees of the luncheon, as well as we had, because we want everybody to have opportunities to receive some type of financial support, so we did also award some gift cards to the bookstore, because we all know the cost of books and supplies for classes is just continuing to be astronomical, especially for first-gen students. And so we awarded some $100 gift cards to those students as well that attended. One of the ones that won, the story sticks out in my mind. She's a non-traditional first generation college student, and she came up after the event and she had tears in her eyes, and she said, "I'm a single parent trying to go back to school to get my degree. I'm having to cut back on my hours at work so I can go to college." And with tears in her eyes, she says, "You never would imagine how much this $100 gift card means to me." Aww. To be able to help with my books.
That's so powerful.
You know, it doesn't take a lot to make a difference. And that's one of the things I always tell folks. You know, we can do a lot with a little. But, you know, one of the other things that we challenged at the end of this luncheon, we challenged our faculty and staff who were sitting at the table with our first generation students. And mm-hmm. we said, you know, first and foremost, there's no such thing as a free lunch. So here you go. We challenged our faculty and staff to exchange contact information with the students that were sitting at their table. And we said, the students that you're sitting with, that you've had a chance to interact with today, they're now your responsibility. Check.
You're signed up.
Yeah, you're signed up. your attendance at this luncheon automatically signs you up.
Oh.
But it was great. We said, check in with them periodically, you know, but we also challenged the students. We said, this is not a one-way relationship either. Effective leaders know and use their resources, and that's something that Dr. Richard Oates probably says 10 times a day around the office. And so with the students, that was also true. You have resources. You need to know what they are, and you need to use them. And so the challenge back to the students was, you know that these faculty and staff sitting at the table are first-generation college students. Many of them have overcome similar challenges and obstacles that you're facing right now. Use them as a resource. So our
That's
goal...
wonderful.
Yeah, it was such an exciting day. And our goal is that we will create these organic mentoring opportunities between our faculty and staff and our students on our campus, that if students don't feel comfortable going to a current professor or an advisor or someone else that would have the perception of being in a leadership position over them, that they might go to the person that they had lunch with at that first-gen lunch.
That's great. That's so powerful. I cannot wait to hear about how this goes and how these relationships develop. I think that's such an incredible resource to give these students.
Well, and it's exciting. You know, we launched it as a pilot on our Gainesville campus, and our goal is that next year we launch the same type of event on all five of our campuses, and we already have our strategic planning group assembled where we are working on other initiatives to come to support first-generation students on our campuses.
That's such important work, and I cannot wait to hear all about it. Jennifer, thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing, and thank
Absolutely.
You for telling us all about it, all the good
yeah.
work that y'all are doing.
Oh, it was great. Always a pleasure, Meryl.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Meryl, that was another great interview. Where are we headed next?
We are swooping down to the Jewel of the South, down to Thomasville, Georgia, in Thomas County, to talk with Andrea from the Chamber.
All right, let's talk to her.
All right.
Hey, Andrea, can you please introduce yourself for our listening audience?
Yes, I would be happy to do so. My name is Andrea Collins, and I have the pleasure of serving as the Executive Director for the Thomas County Chamber of Commerce in Thomasville, Georgia.
We are so excited to have you and your voice on our podcast today. Can you tell me what would you like to share with our listening audience about education, the workforce, and industry from Thomas County?
Yes. Okay, so Platform for Change. And that Platform for Change initiated a partnership between the Chamber and a small business called TISC Task. And TISC Task helps to create change makers, and they do so by equipping the next generation of problem solvers. And they do that by taking a challenge from a business, and they take students through this platform with proper facilitators to learn how to think creatively and critically to develop a solution.
Are these high school students?
These are high school students, ages 14 to 17 or 18. And in order to be a part of that, they have to join our youth leadership program called I Lead.
And so these students, they sign up and they get challenges from TISC Task. Walk me through that.
Yes. So basically, we reach out to the schools and open up an opportunity for kids to apply for our youth leadership program, I Lead. And those who apply, we go through and we narrow down based on a variety of criteria. We want to make sure we have students from all walks of life that typically wouldn't cross paths. So we don't want just all the 4.0 students. We want students that have 4.0, students who have a 2.9, 2.7, students from private school, from public school, from charter schools. And so we create this mix of youth that are part of a class for that year. And in order to kick off the program, they have to go through a one-week intensive. And that one-week intensive is facilitated by TISC Task, which is the small company business that we partner with. And they solicit challenges from businesses here locally. And then they pick four challenges, depending really on the size of the group. This year, they picked four different challenges from four different businesses, and they broke the kids up into groups and took them through the whole process. of trying to figure out how to engage in those real world problems so that they can enable the students to communicate with the adult world. The really cool thing about that was is that, you know, there were trained moderators that guided them through that process of implementing solutions. And then at the end, each student had to pitch the business that submitted the challenge. And here's the big aha moment, or the big Merry Christmas for the podcast today, is we had a student who has a twin sister, and her sister was very heavily into sports, really knew what her niche was. Meanwhile, this participant in the youth leadership program was still kind of struggling to find her niche and ready to move outside of Thomasville, go explore the world. She goes through this intensive and is paired with a business here locally that creates leather bags. And the business basically said, we've got to figure out how to create a leather bag for the business traveler. And so just by the grace of God, this child was paired with this business. And through the moderators guiding her through the process of trying to figure out how to even begin that process of creating something, at the very end, she had created a sketch with watercolor of a leather bag for the business traveler. She created a video and then had to pitch it to the business. The business was so blown away that she created something so magnificent in a week that they hired her. And she told her parents that she finally found her sport. And so I think we were able to kind of keep one of our kids here.
That's magnificent.
We're really excited to see that we have talent here that is underutilized, and they really do have a skill set. It just needs to be tapped into.
That is fabulous. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That was a really fascinating conversation, Meryl. Where are we headed next?
We're going to go a little west, over to Blakely, to Early County, in a community that was pretty hard hit by Hurricane Michael, and talk to Bronwyn Reagan Martin, who is another one of my most favorite superintendents.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do it.
So hello and welcome to Field Notes, our podcast. I am so excited to have you on our conversation today. Can you please introduce yourself to our listening audience?
Yes, I'm Bronwyn Reagan Martin, superintendent down in Early County, down in southwest Georgia, right next to the Alabama border.
Yep. And tell me, Bronwyn, I'm so excited to have you on the show, and would love to hear, when you think back on our last, you know, on recent history as we close out our year and our decade and all this, what are the sort of what are the gems that you would like to share with our audience?
So I would say our major stocking stuffer from the last decade was from a disaster when Hurricane Michael came through our community last October. It really just devastated us. We had homes with major damage. We had power lines down. We had trees everywhere, roads that were impassable. But the most amazing thing came out of that, and that was that our community just came together. We embraced each other. If I had something and you needed it, I handed it over. It was whatever we could do to pitch in together. And, of course, the school was central. We housed the, I don't know how many linemen, dozens of linemen that came from all over the place to come and bring power back to our community. So they slept in our gym. They worked most of the time, but when they could sleep, they were sleeping in our gym. And our students were very involved in the aid, passing out meals, passing out supplies to community members who needed it. So even though it was a disaster in our community, it really is a stocking stuffer because of all the positive just all the love and the community building that happened during this time.
That's marvelous. The school really is the heart of the community, and seeing a moment where that bears out tangibly is so powerful.
Oh, yeah. It was an amazing time. It really was.
Well, thank you so much for sharing, and I hope to see you soon.
I hope so. I hope not far away.
Thank you, Bronwyn.
You're welcome, Meryl. It's always good to talk to you.
Last stop, we're going to go talk to Dr. Kirk Nooks, the president of Gordon State College in Barnesville, Georgia, in Lamar County.
All right, let's take it on home.
Let's do it.
So to begin with, will you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Dr. Kirk Nooks, and I serve as president at Gordon State College.
And where is Gordon State?
Gordon State College is located in Barnesville, Georgia, about an hour south of Atlanta.
Excellent. And Dr. Nooks, would you please, when you think back on your year, on your decade, and you sort of identify what are the bright spots in education and some good stories, what would you add to our stocking stuffer list?
You know, I've been very impressed that just thinking across the state, how the high school graduation rate has been increasing steadily. I can think of articles or instances where, you know, people are saying, hey, record high school graduation rate. And what that translates into is also great, you know, percentages for the college going rate. We're excited about it, but we're even more excited to understand that you cannot wait to have the conversation with students about college until their junior or senior year. So you've got to get started earlier. So what we've been doing so far, as an example, we've been reaching out to our local 14-county primary service region and partnering with them on reading. In fact, my wife has been going out to a number of the elementary schools in the area and reading stories to children that talk about character building and giving them a sense of positive identity. And as a direct result, those students are becoming more familiar with Gordon State College and the notion and concept of going to college. And we know that that's going to pay off for the region long term, because those students will have a better image of what they can accomplish once they get here.
That is wonderful. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
So there we have it. That is our tour of Georgia to sort of close out 2019 and get us started in 2020 and the decade beyond. There's a lot of good work that has been done, and I think there's some strong foundations and some strong momentum in the state to keep going and get us from sort of where we have been, where we want to be, where we are, and where we're going. And it's nice to remember that we're on our way and there's great people out there doing great work.
Absolutely. And it's a privilege to work with a lot of the folks who are doing the great work. And our plan is to continue to be supportive and to push Georgia forward.
You know, the top 10 just came out, and we look forward as a state and as a education policy organization, you know, in terms of us, but just in general, we got to get ready for 2030. And I think one of the best ways that we can do that is by knowing where we've been and what's been working and in what ways we can keep pushing forward.
Right. And on that note, if you'd like a copy of our latest issue of the Top 10, you can download it on our website, www.gpee.org. If you'd like a hard copy, you can also reach out to us via email, rgaines@gpee.org, and we'll get you one in the mail.
It's been a pleasure. Take care.
All right. We'll see you all later.
Hey there, listener. One more thing before you go. You've been hearing from us, but we'd love to hear from you. We at the Georgia Partnership always want to get better at what we're doing. So let us know what you think so far. Also, what are we missing out there across this great state? Who's doing cool things in your neighborhood to support the education and workforce pipeline? What innovations and solutions has your community come up with around economic development? Are there some great partnerships between sectors like housing, health, transportation that are making a difference in your educational outcomes? We'd love to hear about them and spread the word about good work being done across Georgia. We hope to hear from you. To contact us, go to our website, gpee.org, and click on the Contact Us tab in the top right corner. Or give Robert, our communications guru, a call at 404-223-2464. Thanks for listening, listener.